Welcome back. I'm Jesse Baines with Yahoo Finance Canada. You're watching Editor's Edition. We've got a special show for you today because we are in the thick of a federal election. Housing is front and center. All of the parties have announced their plans to make housing more affordable. So let's dig into those plans with Realosophy Realty's John Fasalis. Hey, John, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And in Vancouver, we have Oakland Realty's Steve Suretsky. Thank you for being here, Steve.
Should be fine. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it and start with the NDP. The NDP has a plan. They've been calling out the federal government, Justin Trudeau, for a while now, urging the government to call it a housing crisis. Let's have a listen to Jagmeet Singh, and then we'll get into his ideas.
The CMHC is actually allowing companies, large corporations, to get loans that they then use to renovate people. We want to put a stop to that. Justin Trudeau's allowed this to happen, allowed this crisis to get worse. It's gotten worse while he's been in power. And the CMHC has been used to renovate people. We want to change that by putting in strict rules around when the CMHC loans can be used, that they can only be used in cases of affordable housing, that they cannot be used to renovate people. We want to tackle this housing crisis in a serious way, and we want to build more affordable homes. We want to build 500,000 new homes that are within people's budgets within the next 10 years. We also want to put a foreign buyer's tax. Canadians shouldn't be having to compete with foreign investors when they're buying their home.
Okay, because I saw that smirk on your face, Steve, let's start with you. I want to start with the comments he made about CMHC. What is your response to that?
Yeah, I think the program that he's referencing is basically CMHC has essentially like a rental financing program where if you are constructing or, you know, significantly repurposing, re-upping existing rental stock, basically CMHC has a program where they provide very generous financing to developers, pension funds, et cetera, people that, again, are actively promoting rental housing. I actually think that it's probably the best program that CMHC has actually come out with in the career of CMHC. I mean, if you look over the last 30 years, there's been virtually no new rental housing supply created. And since the introduction of this program, which I think was created under former CEO Evan Sidall, rental housing under construction, I think, is the highest we've seen in 30 plus years. So this is a much, much, much needed segment of the market that was heavily underfunded or underdeployed, basically, where, you know, we're looking for alternatives to home ownership. I mean, what people want is stability in their rental. They don't want to be worried about their, you know, landlord deciding to sell his one bedroom condo every 2 years and having to move. So what's important is to have purpose-built rental housing, and CMHC has been trying to promote that by providing attractive financing. So I think he's misguided in that policy, for one. Number two is I think that obviously the anti-foreign buyer rhetoric is very popular politically. I don't have a whole lot of strong opinion about it. I think that it's no surprise. I mean, clearly every Canadian is saying, you know, let's make housing for Canadians, and I understand that need and that desire. So I have no issues with that.
Yeah, I mean, we do recall Adam Vaughn famously appearing on Steve Paikin's show on TVO talking about, you know, this Canadian market has been great for investors and foreign money, but not so much for Canadians. I was reading an amazing story by Ian Yang, South China Morning Post, about, you know, he took 5 years to get information through Access to Information about research into how foreign money was driving Vancouver real estate. And it was just amazing to see some of that, hugely expensive homes being bought by people reporting like refugee level incomes of like $100, not $100,000, but $100. And if anybody's read Sam Cooper's book, Willful Ignorance, Blindness.
Blindness.
Okay. Yeah, it's just amazing. And I can see how this is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. But John, do you think the train's already left the station, that foreign money's already had its effect, and that marginal buyer has already pushed prices up to a level where it doesn't really much matter if you slap on something like a 20% tax in across the country.
I mean, I think it still matters. I think it's, you know, I don't know how much it's going to move the needle. I think that's the bigger issue. Like, I think if they were going to introduce this, I mean, they should have done it 10 plus years ago. I mean, and the challenge has been all that time, you know, people in the real estate industry have known this is an issue. People on the street have known it's an issue. We've been saying we need to put in these barriers on foreign capital inflating home prices. The arguments from policymakers has been that's a lie, it's a myth, it's xenophobic, you shouldn't be talking about these things. And now we're kind of coming full circle and they're introducing these policies. So they're not bad. I don't know if they're going to move the needle, because to your point, I mean, house prices have exploded in 10 years and a lot of that money's already invested in the market.
Can I just chime in for a sec?
Yeah, please do.
Well, yeah, I mean, I find it interesting because, like, we look at similar countries that are dealing with similar problems. So you look at Australia has got a ban on foreign ownership. You can only buy new housing stock. And New Zealand has a foreign buyer ban that they introduced several years ago. And last time I checked, both countries are still reporting all-time record high in prices, and they've had massive house price acceleration over the last, you know, 18 months, similar to Canada. So I think, yeah, I ultimately think part of the problem too lies in, I mean, you have a lot of the foreigners, so to speak, that are ultimately Canadian citizens or PR. And yes, they may have earned their income elsewhere overseas at more favorable tax rates. And that is certainly hard for someone to compete when you have, you know, very high income tax rates here in Canada.
And I want to apologize to Sam for booting the name of his book. It's a great book. Again, do check it out. I want to also apologize for, my kid is being heard stomping around the house. Sorry about that. We try to contain him as best we can. This is the work from home reality that we're all in. The other thing he wants to do, Jagmeet Singh, is building 500,000 affordable homes within 10 years. I mean, this is something that, you know, it's part of we're going to get to all the different platforms, but it's part of every platform. This whole idea of there's not enough supply, we're going to build. It's made to sound easy that we just set this target, we're going to build X number of homes. Is this A, feasible, John? And B, is this going to, like, say he does get 500,000 homes built, is this going to make a meaningful difference in home prices?
I mean, it's not clear how they're going to do that. I mean, the federal government doesn't build homes unless he's talking about the federal government actually building state-owned housing. So they're not clear on their plan on how they're going to do it. 50,000 homes a year is a significant number in Canada. So I don't know how they're going to be building an additional 50,000 units over and above what Canada's already building. I mean, I think it's important to be to have these supply side policies, but again, a lot of these challenges on the supply side are at the municipal and at the provincial level. So it's not clear that how the NDP is going to do that.
Okay, moving along to rent subsidies. Jagmeet Singh says, you know, rent prices have gone up around $4,000 on average. So he's offering $5,000 for renters. What do you think this will do to life for renters and to the rental market? I mean, does this make owning rental properties that much more desirable and potentially push up prices? I don't want to put words in your mouth, Steve, but what's your feeling? Just say you agree with everything I said. Kidding.
I mean, I just look at it and say 5,000. I mean, why stop there? Why not 10,000? Why not 15,000? So it's kind of a bit of a slippery slope. I mean, I ultimately look at it, if someone has an additional $5,000 a year to spend on rent, I have to think that for the most part will benefit the landlord probably more than the tenant. That's just basically free money that can be used to bid up rent in a really tight rental market. So I think the intentions are there, that he's well-intentioned, that, you know, everybody loves free money. But again, I don't buy into this premise of, you know, free lunches and, you know, again, why stop at 5,000? Why not go to 20,000? So I think it ultimately actually will benefit the landlords, ironically, more than the tenants. But again, maybe I'm wrong.
Okay. And just before we started recording this episode, Jagmeet Singh was in the Vancouver area. He said that he would increase the taxable amount on capital gains for wealthy investors who are renovating and quickly flipping homes from 50 to 70%. A couple of things struck me about that is the fact that he mentioned renovation, not just somebody that buys a house, leaves it alone, it's empty, and then the price goes up a year later, they flip it or buy pre-construction or whatever. But I would think that renovating, fixing up homes would add to the rental supply and be sort of a service to the housing market. So I found that a bit puzzling, and also wondering that, I mean, if you're flipping houses for a living or to a large scale, I would assume you just be taxed on your income, and it's not even a capital gain anyways. What's your take, John?
Yeah, I mean, terrible idea. I mean, especially for people who are investing. At the end of the day, I think flipping has this negative view around it. But the reality is a lot of these flippers are contributing to housing supply. They're taking small two-bedroom bungalows, building big four-bedroom, two-story homes, or, you know, they're renovating homes or expanding them. So I don't think that should be taxed. I think these investors or flippers are contributing to the economy. People get jobs out of it. They're contributing to the housing supply. I mean, certainly if you want to tax someone who's just short-term flipping and doing really nothing to their home, possibly, but I don't even think that's going on in any significant numbers. I mean, most of the flippers out there are actually renovating and investing in properties, and we should be encouraging that.
Mm-hmm. And possibly not coincidentally, that announcement was made about 30 kilometers away from the riding of Vancouver Liberal and Liberal candidate Talib Nur Muhammad, who's made nearly $5 million flipping homes since 2005. That's about 41 properties. One of the things that the Liberals are rallying against is what they call predatory flipping. One of their own is being accused of doing that, just that. But we'll get to the Liberal plan. Probably this news coming out is probably not what Liberal leader Justin Trudeau needs right now. But anyways, let's move on to the Conservative plan. The Conservatives, Aaron O'Toole, has also been taking it to the Liberals for a while. During question period, in media appearances, let's have a listen to Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole.
Canada's recovery plan will build more homes for Canadians and stop foreign money from pushing prices out of reach. First, we will implement our plan to kickstart the building of 1 million homes in the next 3 years. The Government of Canada is the largest landowner in the country. Much of the land the government owns could be developed for housing. We will release at least 15% of the buildings that belong to the federal government to build more homes. To stop foreign investors from sitting on empty homes and to get the proceeds of crime out of our housing market, we will ban foreign investors from purchasing homes here if they don't intend to live in or move to Canada. If people around the world want to invest in our great country, and I want that, we will instead encourage them to invest in purpose-built rental housing to provide more affordable options to Canadians.
Okay, so you hear a lot of some of the same things, but just slightly different. Let's start with the building of homes. This takes it up another notch of building 1 million homes in 3 years. And he did talk about using the government's vast holdings to help accomplish that, along with a bunch of other things. But so, John, what do you think of that plan?
I mean, he's they're trying to start 1 million homes in 3 years, which I still think is very aggressive and probably unlikely. I mean, they're not going to hit 1 million. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think when we look at some of the policies they're putting in place, you know, investing, ensuring that the money that they're invested in giving to municipalities is tied to, you know, the supply side and zoning and in communities where people are, where they're building and investing in transit are very positive. You know, on affordable housing, they talked about encouraging more community land trusts, which is a very good policy to kind of, you know, build more supply that's affordable. So I think on the supply side, they have definitely some interesting policies that they put forward. It's certainly freeing up some of the government's own land.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other things that they mentioned was encouraging Canadians to invest in rental housing by deferring capital gains when you sell, and then you buy the next, as long as you're buying the next rental. Is that, do you think, Steve, something that would have a, what kind of effect would you think that would have on the market?
deferring capital gains. Yeah, I know the U.S. has a similar program. I think it's called a 1031 exchange. Yeah, I think it just encourages. Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know if that's actually going to improve the market or not. I think it's more or less designed to stoke economic growth, right? You're just continuously encouraging more investment into housing. So I'm not really convinced that that's going to help housing affordability. I mean, I think it certainly would be good for, you know, GDP and economic growth, but not for housing affordability.
Mm-hmm. And so Aaron O'Toole's plan for foreign ownership is slightly different. Instead of the 20% levy, he's talking about a 2-year ban from the time you move here. And we have to make it clear that you plan to move here, which is something that Jagmeet Singh said was something of a loophole, because you could pretend you're moving here, not actually move here. So I don't know how they would actually go about enforcing something like that. But John, what do you think of that idea, a 2-year ban on foreign ownership?
I mean, again, like it's not a terrible idea, but like we talked about, it's like unlikely to move the needle very much. Like the number of people who are foreigners investing capital in Canada who have absolutely no ties to anyone living here and can't fold their money through those people is very, very small, right? So even if they put the ban in, the reality is, even if it's someone from overseas who wants to invest capital in Canada, they usually are going to do it through a family member that lives in Canada. And this is probably why at this point, it's probably not going to have a huge impact. I think politically it's very popular. I don't think it's going to do much harm either. I think it's fine to do it, but it's not going to have a huge impact.
And Steve, I mean, Vancouver is infamous for, you know, illicit money coming in. Aaron O'Toole said he would strengthen FinTrack and the Proceeds of Crime Money Laundering and Terrorist Financing Act to help tackle money laundering. I mean, I think by now we've figured out that money laundering, you know, people will argue the opposite, but that it has had a significant impact on Vancouver housing. But do you think that can, I mean, is this too late? Does this have any meaningful impact now in terms of money laundering and inflating house prices in Vancouver by giving these powers to FinTrack?
Yeah, I mean, I think that ultimately the conversations that I've had with people that, you know, or have some greater insight into this than I do, it's really, it comes down to, it's like the system that we have built, like particularly the, you know, the judicial system that we have is not really set up to actually fight this in a meaningful way. And so giving more like teeth, quote unquote, to like FinTrack, I mean, FinTrack is basically a running joke where it's just a form that you fill out just for fun and you throw it into a pile and nobody ever looks at it. So FinTrack, in my opinion, is completely redundant. I don't know what you can do to actually beef them up and actually have some teeth that's going to help fight, you know, illicit funds. I just think it's so much bigger than one policy change or one, you know, a couple more million dollars into FinTrack. I just don't think that's going to move the needle. But again, the intentions are there and we certainly need to work on this collectively, but it's going to take years and years to slowly try to rein in.
Okay. Thank you. Now, another thing that he proposes is making mortgages more affordable. Now, that doesn't mean dropping rates, but what it does mean is stirring up a bit of competition by removing the requirement for the stress test if you're renewing with a different lender. Also some stability with longer terms, 7 to 10 year mortgages, and making it easier for small business owners, contractors, and other people that don't have, you know, traditional steady full-time employment, adjusting the stress test for those people, because it can be difficult to prove regular income when you're running a small business of your own. John, what do you think of steps like that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think steps like that are definitely a positive step forward. Relaxing some of the strict guidelines around the stress test, especially with renewals. Longer term mortgages is a good thing if it allows them to ease the stress test a little bit. I think one misguided thing of the stress test, it really wasn't really necessarily designed to cool the housing market. It was more about reducing the amount of debt people can take on. So we'll see how, you know, effective they are at potentially easing up. Because I mean, right now the you know, the stress test is quite significant, obviously having a big impact on what people can afford.
Yeah. I just want to finish off this portion by just reminding everybody that Aaron O'Toole did say, you know, the Canadians will never, Canada's Conservatives will never tax the capital gain on your primary residence, which is, you know, sort of seen as the golden goose in this country and the hot button issue when it comes to, I get more questions on that every time this comes up than anything else. You know, people worried if the primary residence will be taxed. The Liberals deny that it's a thing, but anyways, he is reminding everybody that the Conservatives would not go there. Okay, I want to shift gears to the Liberal plan. We're going to start with a clip of Liberal leader Justin Trudeau in Hamilton. He's talking about his plan, but he does face some heckling. Have a listen.
To begin with, we'll help you buy your first home soon. We'll get you to a down payment faster with a plan worth tens of thousands of dollars when you buy your first home, and the launch of a new rent-to-own program. At the same time, we'll crack down on the predatory speculators that stack the deck against you.
You have 6 years.
So no more blind bidding.
You have 6 years.
No more foreign wealth being parked in homes that people should be living in.
It's been 6 years.
And to get 1.4 million Canadians, and to get 1.4 million Canadians in a new home in the next 4 years, we'll work with municipalities to get more homes built or renovated. It's not okay that the communities you grew up in aren't in places you can build a life, raise a family, or grow old. It's because the debt is stacked against you. So we have a plan to help fix that, so you can live in the communities you love.
Okay, so you can hear the frustration on that individual. And it's a point, I mean, that's one person's view, but it's a point that is being made by many, which is, you were prime minister for 6 years. If you wanted to do all these things, you could have done them, or you could have tried to do them. And instead, it's election time. And when I just going through the list of proposals, it was as if this was the challenger, the opposition party, and not the incumbent. Lots of stuff to talk about. Before we do that, actually, let's take a look at some charts from John. When people go visit, they bring wine or maybe cake or dessert. But John, we like it when people bring charts. So John has some charts. So let's take a look at the first one. We're going to compare the Trudeau era to the Harper era to see how different things were. So this is annual income growth required to keep up with house price growth. John, talk us through this. What are we seeing?
So we just looked at how much house prices were appreciating on dollar terms each year. And we basically said, we compared Harper's versus Trudeau's, and we said, okay, fine, this is how much they're appreciating each year. If we assume households can borrow up to 4.5 times their income, this is how much your income has to increase by every year to keep up with the housing market, basically. And it's largely because under Harper's government, home prices appreciated about, $25,000 or so on average every year. This is for Toronto area.
Let's pause there for a second. Let's bring up that chart, that next chart, which shows the difference in prices between the Trudeau era and the Harper era, as we let you continue your thought. There we go.
Yeah, so this is, under Harper's government, house prices rose about $25,000 a year. Again, this difference in the Harper from the first term to the end of his term was over close to a 10-year period, while the Trudeau government's was just over 5.5, I believe. And prices rose about, $80,000 a year or so under Trudeau's government. So much more rapid rate of appreciation in home prices. And I think this is kind of why we're seeing right now a lot more frustration, because it's been so much harder to get into the market over the past 5 years than it was, before his government, effectively.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about some of the ideas. I mean, it's very similar. I must note that it came after the Conservative plan. This was the Liberals were third out of the gate in terms of announcing their plan. So again, it's a targeting money laundering, banning foreign ownership for 2 years, just like the Conservatives are calling for. What do you think about that, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, like I said,
because sorry to interrupt you, but I just feel like if these are things that were priorities, why not act on them, right? Because the Liberals did vote down a bill targeting foreign ownership just a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, as I mentioned on Twitter, I think that the Liberals had the weakest housing plan going into this, and I think that it was obviously showing in the polls. And so it's like, okay, let's pull a 180 here. Now it's a ban on foreign ownership, which, again, as you mentioned, in June they voted that down. So I mean, what changed in 2 months? And you know, as the as their heckler alluded to in that video, I mean, it has been 6 years. It's been 6 years of you know, policies that could have been brought in to impact the housing market, to change affordability, and I think John's charts certainly allude to that. I mean, when I calculated it, I think since he was elected in I believe it was October 2015, national home prices are up 70%. So certainly I don't think wage growth is up anywhere remotely close to that. And yeah, I just think it's a lot of political promises, unfortunately. I think there's a lot of frustrated Canadians. It's been sort of surprising to see the polls recently show that. And I think that this is clearly his advisors and whatnot, you know, making a pivot and saying, hey, listen, whether you're, you know, politically right-leaning or left-leaning, I mean, this anti-foreign buyer sentiment is strong. And it whether you agree with it or disagree with it, clearly it's politically popular. And so it took them some time to change, but clearly when votes are on the line, anything goes.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, I almost feel a bit vindicated for the three of us, because we have been talking, you know, is this going to be a political issue? Is this going to be, you know, something that voters are going to punish parties for? And we did find a recent Maru poll that we did with Yahoo Finance that affordability was the most important issue for voters. And it's a young voting block this year compared to other years. And it does appear that the parties are talking about housing a lot. Nothing like they had been in previous elections. And even looking back to the budget, it was like just a footnote in the federal budget. There was a small 1% or 2% foreign buyers tax, a slight tweak to the first time buyers incentive, and that was it. And then nothing happened.
Yeah,
and then the election got called. And go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it though, right? It's like you've got. I just find it interesting. I just feel like maybe his advisors or somebody missed this, but you call the snap election. I mean, I just don't like, what did you think the response is going to be when you have, I mean, inflation today is at a 10-year high. Again, maybe it's transitory, maybe it's not. And then you've got housing affordability per RBC it's the worst it's ever been in over 30 years. So it's like the cost of living is a real crisis. And I think that, yeah, housing should be front and center in that discussion. So, it's a good thing we're doing this show.
Yeah, I mean, it's all interconnected, right? Because, you know, we see inflation ramping up, and just in the GDP print this morning, the headline from Stats Canada was that housing resale activity is weighing on GDP, leading to a contraction in the second quarter. And I, you know, just poking through the charts, and it's quite volatile, to say the least. But so I know, Steve, you looked into this one. This is another thing that the prime Liberal leader Justin Trudeau floated, which was the banning of blind bidding. A, would that even work? And B, is that even federal jurisdiction? Steve.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm all for this. It comes down to the provincial regulations. I've already chatted with provincial regulators here in BC about it. It's something that is desperately needed, but the implementation of that is not as easy as it looks. People just think, hey, if we just have everybody just shows their cards and puts their price on the table, this would be a fair system. It's just not that simple. I mean, one thing they say, oh, it's going to be open bidding process. Sellers don't just pick an offer based on price. It comes down to what are your subject conditions? You know, how long are those subject conditions? When are you closing? What's your deposit structure? So there's so many things that go in an offer. It's not always the case of what's the highest price, but there does need to be some sort of better system implemented. But this ultimately falls under, again, provincial regulators. So I think these are election promises that are designed to, you know, drum up votes. But the implementation of that doesn't seem overly realistic.
Okay. And John, for you, the anti-flipping tax. So if you don't hold onto your property for a year, you flip it, and with exceptions. I mean, life happens. You can't move into the house. But I just think about situations where you buy a house and it takes a year to get built, and you don't end up moving into it because you lost your job or you just can't afford it anymore. Potentially subject to this tax. I mean, it's a bit murky, unclear how this can be enforced very well. But you know, but on the speculator side, people that are legitimately just flipping houses left, right, and center. What's your take on this idea?
Again, I think this is one of these policies that you know sounds popular, or we're targeting these evil speculators who are driving up prices. But the reality is a responsible government's going to exempt anyone who invests a significant amount of money to improve a home or make it bigger, which basically leaves the people who are just leaving the homes empty or doing something very little to them and selling them, which again is a very, very small number. I mean, that's not what's driving up house prices. It's one of these things where they're just kind of clinging to whatever they can to find what is the evil behind our housing market. Oh, let's target speculators. But it's not why house prices explode. It's not like every single person is just flipping a home in 6 months and making $100,000. I mean, it's a simple story, but it's not reality.
Can I just add something quickly?
Yeah, please.
I keep chiming in here, but I just give one example, John. Like I had, for example, I had a client. You know, he's got like a contracting background. But you know, like it was like a 2-bedroom condo. This thing was like, it was a hoarder that lived in there. He was like smoking, you know, cigarettes in there. Like it was disgusting. Like I'm pretty sure there was like rodents, rats, like anything you can think of, the most disgusting place I've ever seen. Clearly not habitable, but then he goes in there, you know, renovates it head to toe, creates a really, really nice space. And then obviously once it's done, like he sells it and makes some money. Like, is he a bad person? I don't know. I guess it's in the eye of the beholder. But so again, anyways, that's just kind of my thought.
I mean, that's exactly the point. I mean, he's investing money. He's employed people. You know, and I don't think any responsible government should be taxing, you know, people who are investing money to fix up houses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we are unfortunately out of time, as I suspected we would be. We are over time. We don't have time for questions today, but thank you so much for being here, John.
Thanks again for having me.
And thank you, Steve.
Ooh, looking forward to the next one. That was fun.
Yeah. And until next time, be sure to check out Yahoo Finance Canada for all your latest news on real estate, stocks, the economy, you name it. See you next time.